Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and I'm joined by my two constant co-hosts, associate editor for The Film Stage, Nick Newman.
Howdy.
And writer for The Film Stage, Danny King.
Howdy.
And here today to help us discuss the sci-fi epic Prometheus, we have a special guest.
Our first guest.
Our first ever guest, making him doubly as special as he would be on any regular day. From film.com, Eric D. Snyder. So, Eric, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be your first guest.
Yeah, no, it's a great pleasure. We started this off, and we didn't know where it was going to take us. And it's taken us now into the realm of vaguely talk show-esque guest having. So,
well, I'll try not to be too awesome so as to set a difficult precedent for future guests.
Yeah, you have a difficult task because you have to make it seem like it's appealing to be on the show without scaring other people into thinking that they can't top what you did.
Exactly. Well, so far it's the best thing I've ever done.
Well, thank you very much. We strive hard for that. For anyone just joining us for the first time, we are a film podcast that focuses on new releases, but we also like to start off our talks with a discussion about a recent piece of film news or a trend that we're seeing in the world of film. So today, as I said, we'll be talking about Prometheus from director Ridley Scott. But before that, we wanted to just get into a little brief discussion about movie trailers. They're ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Every movie has about six of them. And we wanted to kind of explore the idea of a trailer, what we expect from trailers, especially in the wake of just the deluge of different footage that was in all the Prometheus trailers from all different parts of the film. So we wanted to kind of see if people thought that a trailer should just be like a taste of the film, if it should show everything, if it should show nothing. We're going to get into that right away. Though before we do that, I do want to say that if you have any questions or comments about this show, you can always email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. And now I'm at a quandary here because Eric is our guest, so we should let him talk first. But Nick was the one who actually put this topic forward.
You should let Nick start, and then I'll argue with everything he says.
Okay, excellent. That's very gracious of you.
Great.
And I am constantly saying that we need more dissension on this show, so hopefully this works. So Nick, why don't you let us know what you felt that brought this topic into your head for this discussion this week?
I think what brings this topic into discussion is that the multitude of trailers and TV spots and featurettes and Burger King tie-ins or what have you for Prometheus basically gave away the entire film's plot, which is not to
Wrong.
Say that...
Wrong! Just kidding. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Which is not to say that everything in the film was conceded to in the marketing. I mean, you know, you've got there's some surprise cameos. There's a couple of nice shots that you are only getting for the first time. There's, I would actually say, the closest thing this film has to a centerpiece is not even hinted at in the preview. I think you all know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Rhymes with. I won't even hint. Anyway, but going into the film, I had avoided some of the more recent previews because people said they're giving away a lot. And lo and behold, I watched the film and there was really not an ounce of surprise in the final thing. I felt like I had seen all of the important shots. I felt as though every plot twist was already communicated. And it got me thinking how, you know, I waited until I was in the theater to watch the trailer for Django Unchained, because I wanted to experience that for the first time in a theater in that optimal setting, and I'm glad I did. But then it kind of got me thinking how that trailer gives away almost nothing about the actual film. From everything I understand about what's in the screenplay and even the changes that Tarantino has made to the screenplay since it was published, it seems as though you're not even scratching the surface here. So I feel as though there's this very strange conflict going on in film marketing today, wherein we have some trailers are really trying to sell you on everything that's released, as in, what was that trailer that came out? Flight, the new Robert Zemeckis movie. From what I understand, that preview communicates almost the entire plot in 2.5 minutes. And then you have Django, which is really just money shots and James Brown. So I'm trying to figure out why this is happening, why some studios are willing to give away so much in in 150 seconds, and others are really trying to hold everything close to the chest.
And Eric, as our resident guest, do you have any thoughts or assumptions on this?
Well, I assume that, like with Django Unchained, I assume that Tarantino has some influence. I assume that I'm sure it varies from one filmmaker to another, but Tarantino is the kind of person who can say, don't give away anything in the trailer. Mm-hmm. Where I think probably most stuff becomes property of the marketing department and the filmmaker probably doesn't have any say in it. I agree that the trailers tend to give away too much, which is why I usually don't watch them. And I guess I'm conceding defeat. The trailers are going to give away too much, so I'm just not going to watch the trailers. Like, I don't generally go out. I don't pathologically avoid them, but like, I never watch them online. And if I've heard that a particular trailer gives a, you know, spoils too much, and that trailer pops up when I'm at the theater, then I'll plug my ears or close my eyes or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just in general, I don't watch them because to me, I think of them as commercials. Well, I guess I think of them that way because that's what they are.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not really innovative in thinking of them that way. Yeah, and I'm not interested in the new Pepsi commercial or the new Depends commercial or whatever. If I need those products, which
two
I do,
interesting products that you're using from.
Those are two products I use a lot: Pepsi and Depends. if I need those products, I'll go get them. But I don't care about the ads. And with movies, I figure I'm going to watch the movies anyway. So what does it matter? Not like the trailer has to like draw me in because I'm going to see the movie either way. So I guess that's my philosophy. It's just, you know, since trailers give away too much, don't watch trailers, I guess.
Although, don't you have to see most of these movies for your job?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, so the trailers don't really, as a consumer, it's not like the trailer's helping make up my mind whether I'm going to see the movie.
Yeah.
But unfortunately for some people, the trailer is like their main level of exposure to the fact that a movie's even coming out.
And I guess I don't know what the thinking is in giving away so much. But I also wonder how much is really giving away. Like sometimes I'll see a trailer and then I'll see the movie later, but it's not like I memorized the trailer or watched it very closely or paid particular attention to it. And then something will happen in the movie and I'll be like, oh yeah, that was in the trailer. Mm. But I hear other people make sort of the opposite complaint that like once they see something in the trailer, then the whole movie they're just waiting to see that, just looking for that.
Yeah.
And maybe some of us are more observant or more obsessive about movies in that way and pick the trailers apart more closely than others. But I wonder if the average person probably sees a trailer and all just sort of washes over you. Like, okay, there's some explosions, some yelling, and some urgent sounding lines. And then when they watch the movie, it's still basically new to them because they didn't pay that much attention anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Danny, what do you think about this?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the way of looking for lines in movies, because while I was watching Prometheus, I was expecting this like epic conversation where Fassbender ends the conversation by saying big things have small beginnings, and it turned out he just kind of says it like out of nowhere
to himself.
Yeah,
in the room.
And so I was like, okay, that didn't turn out how I wanted, but like that was funny. But I just think in general the way I'm anticipating a movie will kind of impact how I view the trailer. I know Nick felt like the Prometheus trailer like spoiled a lot for him, and like part of my reaction to it is, I don't think the narrative really went anywhere like surprising in the first place. So I felt
save it.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not going to be specific, but like, I'm just saying that I didn't feel like the trailer spoiled a lot for me just because I didn't feel like there was a lot to spoil in a way.
That sort of I just want to say, I felt like watching the film, I was surprised at how standard the plot was, and that has something to do with the trailer, though, because when I saw the preview, I thought to myself, oh, well, they're just kind of giving us a basic overview, so the big surprises are saved. And then you, again, I want to save it, but you see the film and you go, oh, wait, that's kind of it.
You were thinking the trailer sort of makes it look like a generic, typical sci-fi movie.
Right.
But that it would be more than that.
I don't think
saw
it's,
it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily generic. We'll get into that in a few minutes. But
but just sort of a standard sci-fi plot line. And you know, the other thing is, I guess I always think of trailers as being intentionally deceptive. Like, I'm so used to trailers pulling lines and scenes out of context that I don't really expect the movie to actually resemble. Like if there's a shot in a trailer where there's a guy flying across the room, and they sort of make it look like there's, you know, the ship's been attacked. And then in context, in the movie, he flew across the room because somebody punched him. You know what I mean? Just sort of it gives you a different impression of what it actually is. And I guess I'm just used to that, where everything is wrong and deceptive and makes the movie look different from the way it actually is, to where I don't really trust trailers anyway, I guess.
Yeah, that's
I expect to still be surprised by the way things actually turn out as compared to the way they looked in the trailer.
I hope that trailers are that deceptive. That's the reason that I can continue to watch them, is because I believe deep down that they're not trying to show me the entire film, which, you know, without getting too much into it, is one of the things that shocked me so much about Prometheus. I really agree with Nick on that one. I have known people who will get seats, save them, and then leave the theater when the trailers begin because they're that adverse to the idea of seeing anything that could spoil the movie for them. And while I understand that impulse, I don't really subscribe to it. As much as I like to be surprised by a film, I also just can appreciate a film as a narrative. And if you know the story, if it's told well, I mean, it doesn't need surprises per se.
I think they make pills for those kinds of people.
Now I just have this image of you drugging your friends before a movie.
you know who is crazy about it is Jeff Baer, that I do my the Movie BS with Baer and Snyder podcast with. That's a plug for my podcast.
Jeff is
super obsessive about not seeing trailers. He will leave the theater for trailers if he can. He's crazy about it.
Yeah, I don't understand.
So he's one of those.
I mean, again, you know, if it's your job to see a film, then I guess it makes sense because you don't have to be sold it, since you're going to have to go to see it anyway. But
right.
I've only been doing this long enough that I still am in that zone where I'd like to see a trailer. And so being that type of person, you know, you kind of have to make peace with the fact that some marketing, you know, for instance, like the Dark Knight is going to be good and evocative without really giving away the story per se. Like, there still will be surprises, whereas other things like Prometheus, or even the trailer, it seems, for Argo is the same way, where it just seems like it's the entire film just
it's based on historical fact.
It's true. But at the same time, like I said, it's not so much the facts of the story as the narrative technique used to portray it. To me, anyway.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Because I'm an elitist. but yeah, so does anyone have any final thoughts on this idea of what a trailer should be and what it is to you before we launch into our thoughts on Prometheus?
I just want to make this a little quick. What I was getting at with the Django trailer is talking about how, I guess, in the sense that that's a trailer where you're really being sold on the film, and a lot of people seem to respond to it strongly, but that's happening without giving away the fact that, oh, there's, you know, it doesn't even show, for example, Samuel Jackson in the trailer or something. It's almost as though they're saving that for later on as like a surprise or something. Do you think there's a value to that, to keeping things guarded, or do you think that in this day and age it's almost risky?
I personally think there's a value to it. I mean, like, it's not the only thing that matters, but it's definitely something that can increase your enjoyment of a film if you don't know something's coming up.
I guess I'd be curious to talk to people who make trailers, who are in charge of that kind of thing, because like Django Unchained, I still haven't seen that trailer, but it seems like that movie, people who like Tarantino are going to go see whatever his next movie is, whatever it is. Like, the, you know what I mean? The people who are loving that trailer are people who didn't need to be sold anyway. And so, but then obviously they have to try to reach bigger audiences too. And I don't know if showing so much in trailers is an effort to try to appeal to more people or to bring, I don't know. I don't know what the thinking is.
I feel like in a lot of cases it might be trying to build hype by appealing to both. You know, if you're a Quentin Tarantino fan and you see the things in that trailer that appeal to you about Quentin Tarantino, you're going to start talking about it more.
Right.
And if they can strike that same zone where it just looks like a cool movie, someone who's not into Quentin Tarantino could say, oh, I want to see that film.
Right. And there will probably be another trailer for that movie when it gets closer to release that will show some more. Didn't they just announce a cast change like a month ago in that movie?
Yeah,
I thought they were still
casting
that movie.
Maybe that's
why there's not a lot of footage in the trailer. haven't actually shot it yet.
That is always a possibility. It would be pretty awesome to talk to someone who cuts trailers, on top of talking to people, you know, other than professionals like us, who, you know, are either only hearing about a film for the first time because of a trailer, or have been looking forward to a film and seeing a trailer.
Yeah, I wonder if complaining about trailers spoiling too much is a complaint that's more among our people as opposed to just like the average sort of everyday moviegoer, you know?
I have a feeling that it might be, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't remember hearing a lot of regular people making that complaint before. It seems like a complaint that we make.
We just don't nerds. Talk to regular average moviegoers.
Well, that's true. If we can help it, yeah.
We're far too insular. Yeah. All right. Well, now that we've closed out that discussion, I feel we can move on to our feature review, which, of course, is of the sci-fi epic Prometheus, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Numa Rapace, Michael Fassbender, Charlize Theron, Idris Elba, and many, many others.
King has his reign.
Ancient civilizations that were separated by centuries, and yet this same pictogram was discovered in every one of them.
They're smiling.
I think they want us to come and find them.
We're all here because of a map you two kids found in a cave.
Not a map, an invitation.
From whom?
All right, so to kick off our discussion about Prometheus, I don't feel like I really need to run down the plot so much, but I'll do it anyway. This is a movie that concerns itself with a scientific expedition into the furthest reaches of space to try to discover the origins of mankind, but as the poster for this film helpfully informs us, the search for our beginning could lead to our end. So, with that, you know, moody setup, Eric, why don't you tell us what your thoughts on Prometheus were?
Me likey movie.
why we brought you on.
I think it's a visually stunning, a visually arresting sci-fi thriller that's sort of drab thematically. What I noticed, it's 2 hours long, and I noticed it was about an hour into it before it really became exciting. But I wasn't bored with it before that. I was intrigued. I was always intrigued and compelled to keep watching. But it was only halfway through before it became exciting. And then when it was over, I kind of thought, well, all right, I enjoyed that, but I don't feel in a rush to see it again anytime soon. It didn't thrill me the way that I kind of was expecting that it would, given, you know, where it came from and who made it and all that stuff.
Yeah, I sadly kind of have to agree with that. Before we get to my feelings, Danny, how about yourself? What did you think of Prometheus?
Yeah, I agree that visually and atmospherically, it's kind of a pretty stunning achievement. And I've been reading up on the budget, and I think it's amazing that it cost only like 120 or 130 million. That's what I've been reading, which is it costs less than Dark Shadows, if that's true, which is insane.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be our yardstick for all movie budgets.
Yeah, exactly.
Did it cost less than Dark Shadows?
Of course, Prometheus didn't have to pay Johnny Depp $20 million just to be in it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
They didn't have a lot of big big budget actors in this, but yeah, that is amazing.
And I mean, I think the payoff isn't that satisfying, but one of the things that I think is unique is that, especially for a blockbuster, is that there's a sense of kind of intellectual mystery so that while you're watching
I don't know about intellectual.
Well, no, I think while you're watching it, there is, even if it doesn't pay off.
No,
because
I agree.
Not just... Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just say there's not just tension where you're worrying about who's going to live and who's going to die. There's some real gripping tension because you just want to find out what are the ideas that are going to be explored and how are they going to be explored.
I think that's what I mean that while I was watching it, I was into it, and then when after it's over, yeah, I guess that's what it is. Just it doesn't pay off as well as you kind of hope. But while it's going on, you're like, yeah, I want to find out where they're going with this.
Definitely.
And Nick, your thoughts?
I like the film, even though it's very, very stupid. And we can get into that later.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I suppose maybe this will be somewhat reflective of how I've reacted to this movie, where at the outset, I'll just be positive. My expectations for this movie were not exactly low, but they were fairly reserved. I was one of the few people who didn't have their illnesses cured by watching the preview. I found that, you know, the visuals were quite stunning as they are in the final film, but nothing about the narrative or the mystery. What is this thing that might be our beginning but is our end? I never really asked that question myself. I just thought it looked kind of pretty. And then going into the movie, I guess there was some mixed word, and so I was keeping things in check. And then I in some ways, my expectations were a little surpassed because I was expecting a kind of a pretty, head thumper. It's the thing where you
never heard that head
where you knock yourself on the head. Now you've heard it. I was expecting something that was going to look nice, but not give me anything else. And then I found that as it was going along, it was fairly gripping on a narrative level. I kind of wanted to see where things were going. And then when you finally get there, it's hard not to kind of sigh and shrug and think to yourself, well, Damon Lindelof, look what you hath wrought again. if you've seen Lost, then you know what I'm referring to. But overall, it's a nice time, even though it's also disgusting. I think that Ridley Scott is probably never going to concern himself with narrative ever again. I think that by now he's a completely visual filmmaker, which is both for better and for worse. But man, those visuals are nice, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to agree. This is a very gorgeous movie for something that takes place primarily on a desolate, you know, dying planet in dark hallways that just look like the inside of some kind of giant whale.
And in 3D, it's not muddy. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I was actually really impressed with the 3D. I would have been more impressed if my digital IMAX screening hadn't continuously stuttered and stopped and had a 15-minute intermission while they were rebooting the server.
That sucks.
Yeah, it was terrible. I didn't let it affect my view of the movie, though. I didn't like the film.
the press screening I was at, they had the wrong, I don't know what they had the wrong one of, but the screen wasn't wide enough. So the movie was called Rometheu. Like the P and the S were cut off when the title showed up.
Well, that's no good.
Yeah, we didn't miss much. The only time it was noticeable was when they were showing the POV of the characters from inside their suits with all the statistics all around the side of their vision. Kind of cut off the charts and the graphs and all that. Other than that, it wasn't really noticeable. And then also the title, Rometheu.
Well, this, like I said, this is a gorgeous movie. The idea at the center of it was intriguing to me. It's nothing really new, you know, going out into space and meeting God and, you know, fighting.
Mission to Mars.
I was going to say Mission to Mars, oddly enough, Sunshine in its own way.
Well, it's a lot like the original Alien, too. It sort of parallels it, where you've got, in addition, obviously, the strong female central character. But then, you know, a few of the characters at the start are talking about they're just in it for the money. And then what are we doing out here? We're responding to a signal. It's like sort of the same template as Alien. And I just rewatched Alien two nights before, so it was fresh in my mind.
Yeah,
but to where I noticed, it's sort of following, almost like they took the template from Alien and just sort of changed the details and then went off some other directions too. But in a lot of ways, it really kind of parallels that, which is kind of disappointing.
And that
contributes to this being a kind of a familiar story. And as cool as it looks, and there is some really thrilling stuff and some really good suspenseful stuff, ultimately, it's kind of a thin story.
Yeah, my biggest problem with this film was the thinness of the story and just the lack of, I guess, the lack of depth or meaning that it really tries to achieve. This is the type of film that
thinks it has a lot of depth and meaning.
It does.
Yeah,
it talks about
the big questions but doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, it literally just talks about them. It doesn't make you ponder them. It mistakes having a character continuously ask a question for positing a question to the audience, which gets a little tiring at some points. Especially when you have all these supposedly smart people doing a number of very stupid things. So while I should be wondering about their, you know, impulses towards this, you know, why are these people looking for this answer? What's driving them? I'm really wondering,
why would you pick that up?
Yeah, why would you do that? Why would you touch that? Why would you pull your helmet off right now? It's difficult.
Yeah, the helmet stuff.
Yeah, it's like film breaking because it's like these people should know better than to do some of these things.
See, I've heard a few people complain about the helmet. The helmet, taking off the helmet didn't bother me at all. I did.
Really?
It made sense of like, well, if the air is breathable, then yeah, why not take off these stupid helmets?
But there's a difference between saying the air is breathable and saying it's completely free of any like contamination. Isn't that true? Like, I mean, like if the cold bug is in there.
I guess I'm thinking that's what they always do in movies. Like they go to another planet, they realize the air is okay, they take off their helmets. It's just what you do. Who wants to watch people in helmets the whole movie?
And maybe that's my problem for having like the expectation that this would be a little smarter.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think you have to concede that though, when these people are willing to spend $1 trillion and sacrifice 2 years of their lives to go to a planet whose atmosphere you have no knowledge of. Right?
Right. There should be a little more.
Yeah.
Well, then think how excited they are when they get there, and it's just like Earth. Hooray! We can take off our helmets.
It's kind of like a kid on Christmas who opens his toy and doesn't read the instruction manual before he just starts messing with it. And like suddenly he's lost like the detachable spear, and like he doesn't know where the batteries went. And it's just like, you know, of course everything's going to go to hell. Like, you're doing this all wrong.
It's true. Yeah.
That being said, I mean, we should probably get into spoilers because this is a difficult movie to talk about its flaws without really getting into the ideas that we keep kind of offhandedly mentioning. Does anyone have
and
any
that the
final
movie keeps offhandedly?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it offhandedly mentions them. When a character looks directly into the camera and says stuff like,
all right, offhandedly addresses.
Yes.
Yes.
I will say, you know, it feels like I just have to say this because everyone else has been saying it, but it's also true. Michael Fassbender, I really loved in this film.
Yeah.
I loved every scene that he was in, even though a lot of them don't make sense within context of previous scenes. He's so good that I was able to get past that.
He's very compelling. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, anyone else have a final spoiler-free thought before we jump into the plot here?
I don't.
All right.
See it in the theater. That's
yeah,
right.
I would
yes,
say,
for sure.
Even though I didn't enjoy this film, I think, as much as the rest of you, I would still tell people to go see this in the theater because it is gorgeous. It is, you know, pretty thrilling when, you know, it stops trying to be intelligent and just goes for shock and tension. And the 3D is probably the best that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, and I don't think, I haven't read a lot of the negative reviews, but I've seen people on Twitter just talking about how much they hate it or just really seeming to dislike it. And I don't get that at all. I can see being disappointed by it, but I can't see coming out and saying this is a bad movie.
Yeah, no.
Like, I think it can only be a bad movie in comparison to your expectations of it being as great as Alien or something. I can't call this a bad movie at all.
Yeah, a very well made stupid movie is not a bad movie, I guess, is the way I would put it. That being said, it's time to get into spoilers. What do you all think about the basic idea this movie puts forward about the genesis of humanity and where we were heading before, I guess, the extermination mission was scrubbed?
Well, if I spend 90 seconds talking about it, I've spent more time than Prometheus itself, but okay, the opening scene of this movie is nonsensical. What was that? What's going on?
The bald buff guy
falls into a waterfall and creates humanity.
Albino Vin Diesel drinking some sake and then disintegrating.
I assume that was you know, one of the they sent one of their guys to Earth to do that to spawn new life. That's what
oh,
they
no,
do, apparently.
The actual concept behind the scene makes perfect sense. How it actually comes about, not so much.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, when it happens in the movie, yeah, we have no idea what's going on.
And the problem is that it very... mystery in this movie is, okay, we don't have the answer now, but if you come back in 3 years, and if you pay another $13, you can get 2/3 of the story.
Oh, man, you only had to pay $13?
No, I paid $2, actually.
I hate you.
What?
What?
Don't ask. Don't ask.
Okay.
Did you see the movie in Thailand?
Did you see it without sound? Was that the problem?
Did you just pay a guy $2 to tell you about the movie?
No.
That opening sequence actually doesn't need to be in the movie.
It doesn't.
Because it looks really cool, but at the moment, it doesn't make any sense. We have no idea what's going on. It only makes sense, you know, after they tell us everything, at which point, well, then why did you need to show it to us?
Not only that, but the concept of this movie is exploring a mystery of our beginning, and the opening shot of the movie gives you the answer.
True.
So it's like a murder mystery where you see the person strangle their wife, and then the rest of the movie is just like waiting for other people to figure out that the person killed his wife.
No, that's true.
Prometheus is amazingly subversive, is what you're trying to say.
Yes, it's a bold narrative choice.
It's a movie that dares to tell you what happens and then spend the rest of the time figuring out what's going to happen or something.
That should go on the poster.
It's like La Ventura, but
not as good.
No, not as good.
Yeah,
not quite.
The movie raises a lot more questions than it ever answers. And you don't have to answer the questions, even. I heard a lot of people responding to my review on my personal site saying that if I had a problem with there not being answers, then that was the point of the movie, and the movie actually did answer everything. I then had to point out to them that I didn't say that the problem was a lack of answers, and that I don't mind a lack of answers, and that if they found answers, then I don't know what they were watching. It just...
Which questions do you think are unanswered?
I don't think any questions are unanswered per se, and that's kind of the problem, is that instead of creating an idea and letting it flourish in a narrative that is like gripping and engaging, the movie goes out of its way to like in this first scene, it just gives you the answer immediately. And
right.
then has a bunch of other people asking the question, and you just kind of want to like tap them on the shoulder and be like, he drank some stuff and he disintegrated and that led to evolution that eventually led to us, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing, like those questions that get raised from that opening scene are not the questions that gets asked in the movie.
Well, because it's nonsensical.
Right. Exactly.
I feel like the only question that I think the movie brings up that it doesn't answer is what David the Android was up to. But I feel like you can sort of make inferences or guesses about what his motivations were. And apart from that, I didn't feel like there was a bunch of stuff that was brought up and not explained, or things that happened for no apparent reason, for the most part.
Yeah, nothing except everything character motivated.
I have a question, actually. Can okay. somebody answer this for me? Why were aliens directing humanity toward a storage depot?
Yeah.
Honestly, why?
Was it? Were they sent directly to that? To that storage depot, or just to the planet,
they
or to the moon,
sent
whatever
to that
it is.
Cluster of yeah, like, sort of, star systems. And,
yeah,
it's possible that they picked the wrong one.
Well, yeah, because it was a solar system, and that solar system or the star system has a sun, and there's a planet there that's sort of like Earth. So let's go there. But as far as that actual storage locker that they found, I feel like that was just sort of what they stumbled across.
Terrible, terrible luck.
Yeah, really, really, really bad luck.
They're bad scientists.
Well, terrible scientists.
Well, they saw these things lined up that clearly did not happen accidentally, so they thought, well, there's evidence that somebody put this here. Let's go check this out.
Right.
Right.
Nick, you sound really disappointed with the idea of discussing like the finer points of this film.
No, just because the finer points don't really add up to anything satisfying.
If I can say one thing positive about the ideology or the kind of intellectual ideas, I think there's one scene between Fassbender, and I think the other actor's name is Logan Marshall Green.
Tom Hardy too.
Tom Hardy too. Especially right. when he has the hood on, it looks like Tom Hardy.
Yeah. That's why he took his helmet off, so we'd be able to tell him apart from Tom Hardy.
But like, there's a scene between him and Fassbender where they're talking about, like the questions about origins of humanity or whatever. And Fassbender asks him like why humans created him, and Logan Marshall Green says, "Oh, because we could." And then Fassbender's like, "Oh, well, maybe that's why your creators made you."
Or he says something
disappointing. Yeah, to know that that's
out
why
your creator. Yeah,
yeah, and it's really it's really kind of a disturbing line. But what's funny about it is it's presented as like just kind of an offhand scene, and then it goes on to just be this like extended climax of stuff that is a lot less interesting and concrete. And so I just thought it was funny that like the kind of like one of the most interesting lines in the movie was just not given much attention.
I had the same feeling after that scene. I was like, oh, is this going to be the heart of the movie now? And I kept expecting, we were kind of, the humanity is like the Etzel. It's just like something that didn't work and was supposed to be recalled.
That does, right. that exchange does go toward David's whole attitude about where he's sort of, not really jealous of humans, but sort of, he's sort of embittered that he was created by them and then just sort of, but still kept separate from them, which I think goes toward why he then does bad things, probably.
It's also weird. Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe it's just because we have the clarity of having seen all these sci-fi movies and knowing the tropes. I feel like if you create an android that's really close to being human, it's really awkward to say, hey, this is David. He's the closest thing I have to a son, but he has no soul.
Yeah, that was
I know he's a robot, but that's still pretty mean.
What kind of
does
that put him in?
See, yeah, you're kind of rubbing it in there.
Yeah.
Do you expect him to give you like a loving look back, like, oh, thanks, Dad?
Like when that line comes up, I'm just like, well, that was unnecessary. Like, God.
Yeah. And how does that make your daughter feel?
It's kind of like I had just recently watched The Royal Tenenbaums, and it made me think of when Royal in that film is always introducing Margot as my adopted daughter.
Right.
It's just like, well, of course he's going to have issues with you. Jeez.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I felt bad for David in that situation. I had never noticed before how much Michael Fassbender looked like Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia.
There's a
strong resemblance. And part of it was the way he was doing his hair, but he really looks like a younger Peter O'Toole. I had never noticed that before.
There's definitely some of that in the intonations, the way he's reciting the dialogue and carrying himself as well, which was fun.
Yeah, that was a fun and interesting thing to see this person try to get close to humanity by... The other thing, okay, again, just because we've all seen sci-fi, when a robot tells you that something is from a movie that it likes, like the second thing that's supposed to be a cold calculating machine is telling you that it has preferences for something like art, I feel like there should be more than just, oh, okay, I've never seen that film, I guess. Like,
yeah, that's true. You should be kind of alarmed that the robot is...
especially when it's a really ominous line.
Like, well, yeah, alarmed, or at least take notice of what it is that the robot likes. That's true.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's weird because I kept expecting David to be the focal point of the movie, but the movie shifts its focus a few times, and a lot of that has to do with, I guess, who is in the most peril at the moment.
Right.
And all of their peril is different, even though it all seems to be coming from the same place. I won't even ask if anyone really understood the mechanics of the black oily discharges from the canisters.
No.
I'm accustomed just from watching every episode of The X-Files to thinking that black goo is just bad stuff that does bad stuff.
Yeah. Like, you know, it clouds your eyes, makes you an alien.
Yeah, it's just what it is. It's just black goo. Stay out of the way of the black goo. Yeah.
Why are they going to destroy humanity if they created them?
Well, I thought it was just kind of, like I said, like a recall. It's like, well,
yeah,
like
decided they,
out.
Yeah, that was the impression I got. It seemed like there was a line.
But they're going to fly that far to kill people that have no effect on them.
Maybe it doesn't matter to them. I mean, like, if you can hypersleep and just wake up.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like if you drove to New York to kill, like, I was going to say kill your ex-wife. That's awkward. If you're going to drive to New York to, like... It's like New York's a 4-hour drive, but if you can hypersleep through a 3-year trip so it only seems like 15 minutes, that doesn't seem like a big sacrifice. And if their whole deal is seeding the galaxy, then it makes sense that they'd want to off the one that's wrong.
We have colleagues who will get on a plane to go to London for a junket to do a 15-minute interview with some celebrity and then fly back to L.A.
Fair enough.
You know? Is that really any more pointless than flying to Earth to destroy humanity?
I guess not.
I assume that if there's a sequel to Prometheus that takes place between Prometheus and Alien, that it'll be all about what happened, some apocalypse to make all computer technology get way worse.
Yeah, that's the same thing that people were having with the prequel Star Wars films.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
it's just one of those things you just sort of accept, you know, you go with it.
Maybe it's a hipster thing. You know, like more people are buying vinyls now, even though we have a DVD.
Oh, they decide to go in like the year 2100. They decide to go retro and use like really big computers with lots of blinking lights.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know what? This doesn't look science enough. Let's get back to the old ways.
That's fair. Yeah. I can go with that.
I have to also raise this because I really raised my eyebrows when this plot point came up. How are the engineers and humans, how do they share DNA on a complete and total scale? Do you see what I mean? How do they have a 100% match? Because the idea that you have a 100%, the idea that Noomi Rapace is virtually identical to Egghead Man, does that work for you or...
Well, if the way humanity came to be was because one of those things came to Earth and dissolved his DNA into the river,
I know, but
that way.
But
I mean, if we are ultimately descendants of that first thing, then it makes sense we would be sort of created in their image.
It does. It does make me wonder, like, where other animals came from. And
but nobody has the same. You don't have a 100% DNA match with anybody.
I would think that, I mean, not being a biologist and having almost failed every science class I ever took, I'm not quite qualified to speak on this. But
I think those credentials would qualify you for Team Prometheus, actually.
I do know better than to pet like a space alien that is looking and acting just like a cobra, though.
Yeah, so that's
like
then you're not qualified.
I'm sorry. Where's my scientific curiosity? You're supposed to pet strange new animals. That's
you know what would have made that make sense to me actually is if that character had been was he a geologist or a biologist?
He was the biologist.
No, he's a geologist.
No, the geologist was the punk rock guy, wasn't he?
Didn't the punk rock guy Oh no, it was the dorky.
It was Rafe Spall from One Day.
Yes. Yeah, I guess if that character had been specifically like an animal scientist, a zoologist,
right?
Then I could see, because those people will pick up anything, you know.
If he was like a Jeff Corwin type,
or Steve Irwin, then of course, that's his thing. He loves animals. He's gonna check it out. But yeah, that was otherwise kind of a stupid thing to do.
Just a little bit.
Especially after he's scared of a skeleton that clearly isn't moving.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden he wants to play with this new guy.
This thing, yeah, with a giant hissing thing with the big vagina mouth. And why would you pick that up?
There's no possible way that could end well, but he went for it. So, I mean, you got to admire his courage, I guess.
I suppose, eh? I don't know.
Ending of this film, the I guess, you know, the answers that were finally given in their own vague way.
And, or not given?
Yeah, I mean, what do you feel about the lack of answers? Do you feel that
what answers do you think were not given? What things do you think the movie brought up and then didn't answer?
How was humanity created? Why were they created? Neither of those are given. The answers that are sort of supplied are crap.
Well, the how is, well, we saw it. The guy dissolved himself in the water.
Oh, my God.
Well, what do you want? What, that's the thing. Do you want midichlorians? Do you want, like, a scientific explanation of, like, exactly what scientific process?
I want logic. There's no logic to it. How does...
I would have preferred...
Where is he located where he falls into this water and then it spreads across the globe?
That was filmed in Iceland, wasn't it?
Yeah, just somewhere on Earth. So, I mean, in real life, how did life come to be? It started one place somewhere, and then it spread over the planet.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with this film posing questions and not answering them. What I hate is the fact that they attempt to answer them, but do it very poorly.
Okay, but then can somebody answer why were people really created, if according to this film?
I guess that's the next film.
Oh, great. Okay.
I don't think there was a. I don't think there was a why. But also, I didn't think that it. To me, it didn't feel like the movie was really even about that question of why did these aliens create us. It was more the fact that they did, and you know, we're trying to discover to the characters. They're trying to discover that the aliens created us. Never mind why they did it.
Yeah.
It was sort of, you know, where did we come from? Okay, now we know where we came from. Why we came from there is a whole different thing. But I didn't feel like that was. Like I was waiting for that question to be answered.
Yeah, like I said, my main problem was if they had left it ambiguous enough that it was just an existential kind of sword of Damocles hanging over the narrative, then I would have been fine with that. But they moved so close to giving a really bad answer that it kind of diffused any interest that I had.
Aren't these the same, you know, reasonings that went around when Lost ended? Honestly.
I wonder why that would be so.
And I say that as someone who defends the ending of Lost more than most others.
Oh, I thought. Yeah, I got the impression you didn't like the ending of Lost. I was going to argue with you.
I
liked the ending of Lost.
I didn't mind it, but these are the exact same arguments that it's not about the answers and that you shouldn't be seeking them. Well, but I feel like you can't.
What I mean. Like with Lost, it seemed like people had a lot of the same kind of specific questions. Like, well, how exactly did this thing, or what was the chemical makeup of this? And
and
that's where I feel like, well, no, that's not the. You know, it's not the point. They created humanity just because they did. He dissolved himself and became DNA, and then it spawned evolution. That's just what happened. Like, what else do you want to know?
Yeah, I
know,
but again, Lost was another narrative that promised answers and then got really close to giving bad ones. Like the Tree of Life, in its own way, you know, asks a bunch of questions but never really attempts to deliver an answer beyond the idea that, you know, the mystery in and of itself is the answer.
Right.
It's an embracing of that. And I think that this would have been an interesting movie that could have made that concept terrifying rather than comforting. But it, like I said, I've said it like three times now, and I swear this is the last time. It goes too close to trying to give you an answer and fails to do so. And like I said, it just kind of ruins everything else for it on a story level.
That's another thing is Prometheus is not particularly scary like Alien was.
No, and I didn't have a problem with that. I was more in for it for a thriller than for horror. But I mean,
yeah, it's just one could reasonably expect it to be more of a horror film than it turns out to actually be.
Yes,
I was got some good horror moments, like the Planned Parenthood scene.
Yeah, that was interesting. And like I kept saying this entire weekend, you know, she bounces back pretty quick from the alien cesarean.
Didn't put her spacesuit on. Made her grunt.
I like when she went up to the automated surgery machine and it asked her what procedure she needed. Were you hoping she was going to say abortion?
Abortion, yeah.
Like, I wondered if she was going to say that word out loud. I need an abortion.
Holy shit, are they actually going to have her, like, demand an abortion from this machine? Because that would be actually kind of awesome.
You know, in the future, everyone will have an abortion machine just right there in your home.
Yeah.
If you need an abortion, just hop in.
Buying one of those is cheaper than continuously buying condoms.
That's true.
That's the type of thing they would put on the infomercial for the abortion machine.
The
over
abortion-matic.
The course of your lifetime, you could spend up to $4,000 on condoms. I feel as though we may have gotten off track.
Okay,
don't ask me why.
This is the last thing I'll say in regards to the movie being really, really stupid. I feel like the entire movie's narrative track is encapsulated in a 30-second moment where Michael Fassbender's character David asks one of the egghead men the question about, he's asking, you know, the big questions. And what does he do? He rips off the head and he picks it up and he hits another character in the head with that.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of it. I feel like that's the entire film where
you didn't think that answered a lot.
That's a pretty good answer.
I feel like that is entirely just it's emblematic of the entire film. It looks nice. It's kind of thrilling. You don't mind it. But afterward, you're thinking, oh, God.
All it really did was tear off somebody's head and hit somebody else with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. No, I get what you mean. I get what where you're coming from with that.
I think what's most emblematic of this film is Guy Pearce in old man makeup.
Why didn't they just get an old actor?
I saw Guy Pearce's, this is a personal anecdote, but I saw Guy Pearce's name at the beginning of this, and I was like, I didn't realize he was in this. I love Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce is amazing. And so every 5 minutes, I would say to myself, when is Guy Pearce showing up? Why isn't Guy Pearce here? They're in the spaceship already. Like, where's Guy Pearce?
You didn't realize you'd already seen him?
No. And then, like, when he finally showed up in person, not as the hologram, I was like, holy shit, that's Guy Pearce. Then, of course, it set up, like, oh, the expectation that the albino dude was going to, like, touch him and he was going to become young again. And,
right.
But then he got bludgeoned with Michael Fassbender's disembodied head, and then he
somebody,
died.
I think, Drew McWeeny said on Twitter that there was a scene that was not shot, but I guess written, where somehow we would have seen the young Guy Pearce through a memory, like
there,
David was going to access
a viral, there was some viral marketing where he was young, is odd. But there's a YouTube clip where he's young and he's like delivering a Wayland Industries lecture.
Oh, the TED Talk?
There was something that was going to be in the movie, though, where I think the idea was that David would access his memories somehow, and so we would see him younger. Anyway, there was some kind of logic at one point for having a young actor do it, but obviously it didn't make it to the final.
Also, Patrick Wilson as Dr. Shaw's father. Yeah. That was a lot of odd.
Two minutes. Yeah.
Things like that just kind of like knocked me off guard in this film.
When he showed up and I thought, well, that's the last we're going to see of him because his name wasn't in the opening credits.
That is true.
Right.
Yeah. Like, well, I guess that's it for his story.
All right. So I feel like there's not a lot of narrative here to dissect, and yet we've done a pretty good job of dissecting it. Does anyone have any final thoughts they'd like to put out there before we bring this review discussion to a close?
I think it's an enjoyable movie to watch. One of those that's more about the journey than the destination, because the destination is, as Nick said, not all that.
Yeah. Would it,
but while I was watching it, I enjoyed myself.
Would everyone agree that you should see this in theaters? I can't remember if we really came to a consensus on that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Like I said,
this is just like the Avengers, where I spend so much time dissecting it and why it has these multitude of problems. And at the end, I go, but I liked it.
Yeah, you could see it.
Better than the Avengers.
It's better than the Avengers. It was funny because all the people who follow me and interact with me were just waiting for me to have another, I guess, fight over this like I did with the Avengers, because I had to continuously try to explain to people why I didn't like the Avengers that much. And I think they were disappointed that I wasn't that into it.
Did you guys not like the Avengers?
It was good. It was entertaining.
Fun.
It wasn't anything special.
Well, yeah.
You should listen to that episode, because I was actually waiting for the point.
Oh,
in this
I don't listen to podcasts really.
I was waiting for the point in this episode. I was wondering which character death would cause Nick to just start laughing uncontrollably for a good minute and a half.
Let me think.
You got a couple. There's some good ones. Charlize Theron not running to the Charlize, side and getting crushed by a massive spaceship?
That's what people always do. People always do that in movies. They'll keep running in a straight direction instead of veering off to the side.
Yeah.
I liked her character, so I felt maybe that reflects more about me, just the fact that I liked that character than
I loved that character.
That, you know. No, but I just kind of identified with her because I wouldn't let the diseased man come on the ship.
Well, yeah.
Everyone I saw this movie with was like, I don't know why they thought she was such a bitch. Like, she was the only person who was
she was right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that will bring us to the end of our discussion of Prometheus. You know, we all think you should see it. Just adjust expectations downward. So now is the time that we get into our look forward to the week ahead, and then we'll give you some random picks of movies that we've seen this week that we think you should check out. Eric, do you have time to stick around for this?
Sure.
All right, excellent.
Yeah, got a minute.
So coming to DVD this week is Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, Good Deeds, the newest Tyler Perry film. That's really kind of about it that I'm seeing on the new releases. Does anyone
like?
Yeah, it's one of those weeks. Does anyone have any good things to say about anything that's coming out?
I haven't seen any of those.
No, I've seen Ghost Rider and Sherlock Holmes. I would not
me too.
Say that you should.
You know what's coming out from Asylum is Alien Origin.
Yay!
Awesome.
Okay, well, we can skip over that, I guess, because I don't think there's anything good there.
Some good stuff on Criterion.
Anything that you want to highlight specifically?
Well, there's Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush, Harold and Maude, Danny Boyle's Shallow Grave.
Oh, that's getting Criterion?
Yeah.
Nice. I love that.
In 2 days. As of this recording, 2 days.
Wow.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I think I'll be picking that up then. As for the theaters this weekend, according to IMDb, on June 15th, we can look forward to Rock of Ages, That's My Boy, The Woman in the Fifth, Your Sister's Sister. Any thoughts on those?
Your Sister's Sister is good. I saw that at Sundance.
Yeah,
I've heard as much.
Yeah, that is really good. It's very very likable. Rock of Ages and That's My Boy I haven't seen yet, but I assume they're terrible. I mean,
yeah, Rock of Ages is I don't even like the songs involved with that.
That's the thing. Yeah, I've seen all three Rock of Ages trailers, and they all just make me hate the movie. Because I hate all those songs, and having them sung by other people is not helping. Nobody should listen to my review of that movie because I'm going into it already biased, assuming I'm going to hate it.
Wow, that's good candor right there.
I'm just saying up front, I'm going to hate Rock of Ages.
All right. So apparently, none of us can think of any new things coming out that you should really check out, unless Your Sister's Sister is opening near you. It's limited.
I've heard that's good.
Like I said, it as long as it's opening near you, because God knows I had to wait to finally see Moonrise Kingdom. So, damn you, limited releases. let's go through one by one. We can start with our special guest, Eric, and we'll talk about a movie that you've seen in DVD this week and why you think we should check it out.
Let's see, what did I watch this week? You know what I watched for the first time and enjoyed on Netflix Instant was Dial M for Murder. Ooh. Alfred Hitchcock from 1954.
Yeah,
and it's sort of lesser Hitchcock, but it's really it's based on a play, and it's based on a very clever play, and I enjoy that. It's a fun murder for hire, things go wrong, twisting and setups and frame jobs and stuff, and it's just a fun, very enjoyable, not very complicated movie that I enjoyed a lot, and it's on Netflix Instant. Dial M for Murder. It's more fun if you say it like that.
All right. And Danny, what about you?
Well, we may or may not be talking about Take This Waltz in a couple weeks, but in anticipation of that, I watched Sarah Polley's Away From Her last night, which I hadn't seen actually when it came out a couple years ago. But I mean, if you're in the mood to get a little sad, it's very recommendable. It's a pretty devastating movie.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's a trick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
But, be prepared for some tears.
So it's not the type of movie you want to watch if you want to appear to be manly?
Yeah, I wouldn't follow it up with Rock of Ages either, I don't think. I don't think those two would go together.
I'm sure there's
which
an Alzheimer's
one will make you
joke
sadder?
In there somewhere.
Which one's going to make you more sad?
That's actually, that's debatable.
For different reasons, yeah.
Yeah.
One is a deep existential terror. The other is a personal, heartfelt sadness.
Right.
Nick, what did you see this week that you'd like to recommend?
A bit of a carryover from last week, because Danny, you watched or rewatched Roman Polanski's Repulsion. And yeah. On what day is that? Thursday, for the first time, I watched Knife in the Water, which is, you know, early Polanski, much like Repulsion, and is pretty terrific. It's not what I was expecting at all. I thought it was going to be in the style of something like Funny Games, but it's really just, I don't want to say just, because that is reductive, but where I thought he was going to, this mysterious character was going to take these two people hostage, it's a rich man being very rude to a hitchhiker, and there's tension there, sexual, psychological, physical, beautifully shot. Very tense, a lot of interesting social goings-on, if you will. I'm very, very eloquent.
It's okay. It's not like this is dependent upon being well at speaking.
Right.
Especially since I just used the sentence being well at speaking. Good Lord.
You are pretty well at speaking, though.
Infectious. That's what you...
Yeah. No, but it's a great film. I watched it on Hulu Plus, so... But I'm sure you can get it from Netflix on the physical disc.
On a what?
A physical disc.
A what?
A what?
Isn't that what you throw to dogs in the park?
I wonder how David was watching Lawrence of Arabia. Like, in what format?
He was watching it in Hulu 3D. Plus.
Was it 3D?
Well, in the when you watch it.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
It's probably ultraviolet, because I hear that's catching on like wildfire. For me personally, to wrap up for our, out-of-market stuff, I watched The Adventures of Robin Hood, directed by Michael Curtiz.
Oh, directed by Ridley Scott?
Yeah, no.
With the old Errol Flynn?
Yeah, exactly. With Claude
I have never
Rains.
Seen that.
You have never seen that? Oh, man.
It's on my list. It's on my shame list.
This is one of the movies that probably when I was like 2 or 3, you know, it was on one of those channels where they played movies. And I just got into it, and I never let go. And it's one of my favorite movies still. And so every once in a while, I have to revisit it. And people were talking about, you know, Ridley Scott, director of Robin Hood. I was like, oh, I should watch Robin Hood. But not his Robin Hood.
So, should watch the good one, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually the release of Russell Crowe's version of Robin Hood was the reason why I bought this version of Robin Hood. So at the very least, I can thank the movie for that. But it's a good old fashioned action adventure. You know, a lot of wit, a lot of charm. Errol Flynn's amazing, and I think this summer more than anything else has galvanized my opinion that archers are by far the coolest action heroes. So
We need to talk about Kevin.
That's right.
That's last year, but it gives me a whole new appreciation for that.
I still haven't seen that. I'm so upset. I really should get
it's
into
good.
That. Maybe that'll
it's
be
good.
What I talk about next week if I like it enough.
Mm.
All right.
Great theme song.
It has a great theme song.
It does.
That would be a pleasant surprise to go into a movie like that and be like, man, I dig this opening theme.
After you see it, we'll have a fun surprise for you.
Okay. Well, now I have to see it.
Yeah.
But as far as this podcast goes, I believe we're here at the point of wrapping up. So we'll go through. We'll tell you where you at home can find more of our stuff on the internet. And then we'll sign off. So, Eric, why don't you let us know where we can find you?
I write words at film.com, mostly, in my own site, ericdsnyder.com. And I'm on Twitter, Eric D. Snyder. And I'm the co-host of a podcast, Movie BS with Baron Snyder, every Friday at moviebs.com.
Excellent. And Danny?
I have a personal blog, thekingbulletin.com, with words as well, English.
Oh, English.
And, yeah. And twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
And Nick?
Well, I write all my words with wingdings. And
it takes a little more effort, but it really helps you get the meaning out of it.
I can't say that without laughing because wingdings are so stupid. No, all of my words are at thefilmstage.com, but there are some extra typings going on at twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
Well, I don't write words. I write sentences. And all the sorry. Sometimes paragraphs too. It's weird. I'm everywhere.
And you speak well them too.
I do try to speak well them. Oh God, I'm never gonna live that down now. I can't even edit it out now because the joke has become so implicit to understanding the
right.
Last quarter of this podcast. Oh well. You can find all my other work at dearfilm.net. It's my personal blog. I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/BrianJRowan, Brian with an I. And yeah, that's it for today. So I'd like to thank again our guest, Eric D. Snyder, for coming and joining us to talk about Prometheus.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Excellent. And to all of you listening at home, don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes, leave a little comment, leave a star rating, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can contact us at podcast@filmstage.com. And we look forward to speaking to you next week when we're going to be talking about... What are we talking about? I don't even...
Oh, man.
That's we'll my boy, Rock of Ages.
We'll figure
Double
it out.
Review.
It'll be
good
a surprise.
Good luck with that.
So thanks for tuning in, and join us again soon.
Tattooed British man.
Tattooed British man. Is that how he was credited?
Did he have a name?
I'm sure he probably did.
It seems most likely that he has a name, yeah.
Yeah.